Joshua 3. Early in the morning, Joshua and all the Israelites set out for Shittim and went to the Jordan, where they camped before crossing over. After 3 days, the officers went throughout the camp, giving orders to the people. When you see the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord your God, and the priests who are Levites carrying it, you are to move out from your positions and follow it. Then you will know which way to go, since you have never been this way before. But keep a distance of about 1,000 yards between you and the ark. Do not go near it. Joshua told the people, consecrate yourselves, for tomorrow the Lord will do amazing things among you. Joshua said to the priests, take up the ark of the covenant and pass on ahead of the people. So they took it up and went ahead of them. And the Lord said to Joshua, today I will begin to exalt you in the eyes of all Israel, so that they may know that I am with you as I was with Moses. Tell the priests who carry the Ark of the Covenant, when you reach the edge of the Jordan's waters, go and stand in the river. Joshua said to the Israelites, come here and listen to the words of the Lord your God. This is how you will know that the living God is among you, and that he will certainly drive out before you the Canaanites, Hittites, Hivites, Perizzites, Girgashites, Amorites, and Jebusites. See, the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord of all the earth will go into the Jordan ahead of you. Now then, choose 12 men from the tribes of Israel, one from each tribe. And as soon as the priests who carry the Ark of the Lord of all the earth, set foot in the Jordan, its waters flowing downstream will be cut off and stand up in a heap. So when the people broke camp to cross the Jordan, the priests carrying the Ark of the Covenant went ahead of them. Now the Jordan is in flood all during harvest. Yet, as soon as the priests who carried the ark reached the Jordan and their feet touched the water's edge, the water from the upstream stopped flowing. It piled up in a heap a great distance away at a town called Adam in the vicinity of Zarethan, while the water flowing down the Sea of Arabah, the Salt Sea, was completely cut off. So the people crossed over opposite Jericho. The priests who carried the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord stood firm on the ground in the middle of the Jordan, while all Israel passed by until the whole nation had completed the crossing on dry ground.
When the whole nation had finished crossing the Jordan, the Lord said to Joshua, choose 12 men from among the people, one from each tribe, and tell them to take up 12 stones from the middle of the Jordan, from right where the priests stood, and to carry them over with you, and put them down at the place where you stay tonight. So Joshua called together the 12 men he had appointed from the Israelites, one from each tribe, and said to them, go over before the ark of the Lord your God into the middle of the Jordan. Each of you is to take up a stone on his shoulder, according to the number of the tribes of the Israelites, to serve as a sign among you. In the future, when your children ask you, what do these stones mean? Tell them that the flow of the Jordan was cut off before the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord. When it crossed the Jordan, the waters of the Jordan were cut off. These stones are to be a memorial to the people of Israel forever. So the Israelites did as Joshua commanded them. They took 12 stones from the middle of the Jordan, according to the number of the tribes of the Israelites, as the Lord had told Joshua. And they carried them over with them to their camp, where they put them down. Joshua set up the 12 stones that had been in the middle of the Jordan at the spot where the priests who carried the Ark of the Covenant had stood, and they are there to this day. Now the priests who carried the Ark remained standing in the middle of the Jordan until everything the Lord had commanded Joshua was done by the people, just as Moses had directed Joshua. The people hurried over, and as soon as all of them had crossed, the Ark of the Lord and the priests came to the other side while the people watched. The men of Reuben, Gad, and the half-tribe of Manasseh crossed over, armed, in front of the Israelites, as Moses had directed them. About 40,000 armed for battle crossed over before the Lord as the plains of Jericho for war. That day the Lord exalted Joshua in the sight of all Israel, and they revered him all the days of his life, just as they had revered Moses. Then the Lord said to Joshua, command the priests carrying the Ark of the Testimony to come up out of the Jordan. So Joshua commanded the priests, come up out of the Jordan. And the priests came up out of the river, carrying the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord. No sooner had they set their feet on the dry ground than the waters of the Jordan returned to their place and ran in flood as before. On the 10th day of the first month, the people went up from the Jordan and camped at Gilgal on the eastern border of Jericho. And Joshua set up at Gilgal the 12 stones they had taken out of the Jordan. He said to the Israelites, "In the future, when your descendants ask their fathers, 'What do these stones mean?' tell them, 'Israel crossed the Jordan on dry ground. For the Lord your God dried up the Jordan before you until you had crossed over. The Lord your God did to the Jordan just what he had done to the Red Sea when he dried it up before us until we had crossed over. He did this so that all the peoples of the earth might know that the hand of the Lord is powerful, and so that you might always fear the Lord your God.'"
Well, good evening, everyone. How are you? I have to say, I'm feeling slightly old. Slightly old. And I say that because I realise my memory is not as good as it used to be. If I'm someone that I'm supposed to know your name and I've gone and forgotten it, this is a good moment to apologise to you. I'm finding it difficult sometimes to remember names in particular. I wonder if you find it difficult to remember things sometimes. Maybe remember a birthday. Maybe remember an anniversary or some appointment or other. I guess it's not really the end of the world. But what about the really important things? I think it can be frighteningly easy to lose sight of things that really do matter. It's soon going to be a century since the end of the First World War, and way back in 1918 they wisely instituted Remembrance Day. So every November now, thousands of people wear poppies. Lest we forget, that's the slogan, lest we forget what happened then, lest we forget how many people lost their lives, lest we forget what it was all about, why it was done, and what it was all for. Or here's another example. Here's an Orthodox Jew, and he's got, I don't know if you, how clearly you can see it, he's got verses from the Old Testament law bound round his forearms, and on that little box in his forehead, it's called a phylactery, and he has these verses there in case he forgets what God's Old Testament law says. It's there to remind him. Well, chapters 3 and 4 of the book of Joshua are all about how the Israelites, God's Old Testament people, how they cross the Jordan River, and the Jordan River is the boundary of the land of Canaan, how they cross the river and they enter the promised land just exactly as God had promised they would. If you were here a few weeks ago, we looked at chapter 1 and we saw how God always keeps his promises. And then if you were here last time, we looked at chapter 2. We saw how they sent out spies into the promised land, and Rahab sort of looked after them, and they brought back an encouraging report. And that's where we've got to in Joshua as we come to the beginning of chapter 3. And it's brilliant because here at last, after 40 years wandering around in the desert, at last, it's going to happen. God's people are actually going to enter the promised land just as God promised they would. Well, here they are. I don't know how clearly you can see that, but the river Jordan runs right down the middle of the map and into the Red Sea, and that's the border of the promised land. So to the west, to the left of that is the promised land, and my red dot there is where the Israelites are, poised on the eastern bank of the Jordan, all ready to go. And here's Jericho, just on the other side of the Jordan. And Jericho is the main city in that whole region. Well, centuries before, 4 centuries before, God had promised Abraham this land of Canaan. Here's what God had said to Abraham. It's in Genesis. "The whole land of Canaan, where you are now an alien, you Abraham, I will give as an everlasting possession to you and your descendants after you." And now, it's about to happen. See what a crucial moment this is in Old Testament history. Now it's going to happen. This is a pinnacle of Old Testament history. And that this landmark event is set out for us in these verses we've just read in Joshua chapter 3 and 4. But I don't know if you noticed as we read it through, as it was read to us, what we find is there's a whole chunk in the middle of this account that's taken up with not what happened, but about how to remember what happened. Did you notice that? There's a big bit in the middle that was all, not the narrative, it was about how not to forget what went on. Because we men and women forget so easily, like Remembrance Sunday and the war, we need to be reminded. Like the Jews and their little boxes of verses, we need to be reminded. Now, here's how these chapters fit together. 3:1-17, chapter 3, crossing the Jordan. Chapter 4:10-18, crossing the Jordan. But the middle bit, right in the centre, says, remember. First 9 verses of chapter 4 about remembering. How never to forget what happened when God brought his people across the Jordan. And then the last verses, verses 19 to 24 of chapter 4, are a sort of summary, a sort of wrapping up of what's happened at the end there. That's how it works. So, the spies come back from Canaan at the end of chapter 2, and the Israelites get up and they march the 7 miles from Shittim where they were right to the edge of the River Jordan, right to the east bank, and they camp there. And the people are told, if you look, we're in Joshua chapter 3 and which verse? Verse 3. Joshua chapter 3 verse 3. They're told, when you see the Ark of the Lord, the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord your God and the priests who are Levites carrying it, you are to move out from your positions and follow it. The Ark of the Covenant. Maybe we need just to stop and remind ourselves, what is the Ark of the Covenant? Well, it's something God commanded the Israelites to make during these years in the desert. And basically, it's a rectangular wooden box, about 4 feet long, about 2.5 feet wide, and about 2.5 feet deep. And it's covered in gold, and it has a lid on it made of pure gold, and it was made in the tabernacle in the desert after the Exodus, because God told them to do it and gave them instructions and told them what it should be like. And it looked something like this. And it had these poles for carrying it and these gold angels on the top. And that's roughly what it looked like. And inside it were the tablets of stone with the Ten Commandments on them and a gold jar of manna to remind them of how God had fed them in the desert, and Aaron's staff which had budded. And if you want to know all about that, you can look it up later in Exodus 25. It tells you all about that. But that's not the point here. The point here, the important thing here, is that the ark symbolizes God's presence. The ark is a symbol of God's presence with his people. God had said, there I will meet with you. That's what the ark is about. And that's the most important thing about God's people. That God is with them. That God is with them. When the Israelites rebelled against God in the desert and made the golden calf and worshipped it, remember that? Then God threatened not to go with them into the promised land. And here's what Moses said. Let me read it to you. Moses said, if your presence, Lord, does not go with us, do not send us up from here. How will anyone know that you are pleased with me and with your people unless you go with us? What else will distinguish me and your people from all the other people on the face of the earth? So the ark isn't magic. The ark is a visible demonstration that God is with his people, that God intervenes on behalf of his people. And God's people are those that God is with. And what the Israelites need to learn about God here is that God is not a territorial God. Because that's what most people believed in those days. So there aren't gods of Egypt that are in a position of power in Egypt and you worship them when you're in Egypt. And then gods of Canaan that you worship when you're in Canaan because they're in control there. No, no, no. There's only one God. That's the lesson that they need to be learning as they go into Canaan. When they go into the promised land, they're not leaving God behind them. God is going with them. Well, not just with them. In fact, God is going before them. They're to follow the ark. That's what it says in verse 3, isn't it? When you see the ark of the covenant of the Lord your God and the priests carrying it, you are to move out from your positions and follow it. So as they set out, here's the message. Follow where God leads. Follow where God leads. Now look at verse 4. Keep a distance of about 1,000 yards between you and the ark. Do not go near it. See, they've not to be casual about having God with them. Having the living God, the omnipotent, all-powerful, awesome God with them is a fearful thing. It's an awesome thing. Many years later, maybe some of you remember, many years later, when the Israelites were taking the ark into the newly built temple in Jerusalem, and the ark was being carried along on a sort of cart to take it there, something shocking happens. The cart's out of rocks and it threatens to fall over, and this man called Uzzah puts his hand out to steady the ark. And you read it and you sort of think, well, good for him. But no, God strikes him dead. God strikes him dead. It's shocking. You can't be casual with God. The instructions were, don't go close to the ark, don't touch the ark, stay back from the ark, don't be casual with God. And I think we're very easily casual with God. I think we easily take it for granted that we can approach God. We take it for granted that we can speak to God. And that's true, and it's wonderful. But God is not our pal. God is the sovereign God of the whole universe. God is completely other. God is infinitely above us. God is different. After the Israelites settled in the promised land and they built the temple in Jerusalem, the high priest would enter the most holy place behind the curtain in the inner part of the temple where the ark was once a year on a special day on Yom Kippur. And he would have a rope fastened round his ankle so that if he did something wrong, if he made a mistake and God killed him, his corpse could be pulled out without anyone else going in there. So let us rejoice that we are not in that situation. As God's New Testament people, we don't need an ark to remind us God is with us, do we? We don't need a priest to approach God once a year for us with a rope tied round his waist. No, no. If you're a Christian, you can come to God at any time, in any place, in Jesus' name. Let's rejoice in that. And much more wonderful than that, not only can you approach God, if you're a Christian, God is living in you, in the person of the Holy Spirit, all the time. But, you mustn't be casual. I mustn't be casual with God. There's a real sense in which it's dangerous to be in the presence of God. God's presence is our great joy and at the same time our great peril. That doesn't mean you can't be intimate with God, but it does mean you can't be casual with God. God is not our pal. God is the almighty, sovereign ruler of the universe. There's a right distance between ourselves and God, a proper reverence, a right sort of fear. God is holy, that's what's meant by holy. God is different, separate from us. Think of it like this, just think for a moment. In the Bible, Moses is called God's friend. Abraham, he's called God's friend. In the upper room, the first 11 disciples, they're called, Jesus says, you are my friends. God says that to these people. But nowhere in the Bible is God called anyone's friend. Nowhere. God bestows his friendship on men and women. We don't bestow our friendship on God. Jesus said to his disciples in the upper room, you are my friends if you do what I command. And we can't turn down and say to Jesus, well, hey Jesus, that's great, and you can be my friend if you do what I command. Of course not. There's a difference. There's a distance between us and God. That's what holiness means. Keep a distance of about 1,000 yards between you and the ark, they're told. Do not go near it. Now look at verse 6. Joshua said to the priests, take up the ark of the covenant and pass on ahead of the people. So they took it up and went ahead of them. According to the law, it was the responsibility of the priests. They were authorized to carry the ark. And the people were there to follow on behind, at a distance. God goes before them into the Jordan, and they follow through the waters of the River Jordan. Throughout the Bible, water is a picture of judgment and death. All the way through the Bible. Ancient Israel had no coastline. They were frightened of the sea. So as we look through the Bible, we see water at the flood in Genesis. What happened? Everyone in the world was drowned, except Moses and Noah and his immediate family. It was God's judgment. And the waters of the Red Sea at the Exodus meant destruction for God's enemies and salvation for those who belong to God. The word baptism, when we pour water over people or immerse people in water, it literally means drowning. It's about judgment. It's remembering that Jesus took the judgment, took the punishment for us. So water is a picture of judgment. And here the people have to go through the waters of the River Jordan to get to the Promised Land. And it pictures something much bigger. We have to go through death to get to eternal life. We have to go through the final judgment to get to heaven, our promised land. And just as the Ark of the Covenant of God's presence goes first into the water here, goes there ahead of the people, and they follow, so Jesus has passed through death and judgment ahead of his people. This is what the writer to the Hebrews wrote. Hebrews 12. Let us fix our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy set before him endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of God. He went first, the author and perfecter. He did it first. So the people in Joshua's day, they're told to follow the ark of God, and God will be with them. We're told to follow Jesus, Jesus the Son of God, Emmanuel, God with us. Now look, think about this. Jesus doesn't ask us to do anything he hasn't done. Right? Jesus doesn't ask us to go anywhere where he hasn't gone. We're to follow where Jesus leads, through death to eternal life, through the water to the other side. Jesus has gone ahead of us. The New Testament tells us Jesus is the firstborn from the dead. and we'll follow. New Testament tells us Jesus is the firstborn among many brothers, and we follow where Jesus leads. See? Now look at verse 8. Tell the priests who carry the Ark of the Covenant, when you reach the edge of the Jordan's waters, go and stand in the river. Go and stand in the river. Well, why? That's what they must have thought, isn't it? What is that going to achieve? I wonder if that's what some of them were saying. So the priests are going to get their feet wet. Well, so what? Sometimes obedience to God doesn't look very clever. Sometimes we don't see what God's doing until later when we're able to look back and see how it worked out. The retrospectoscope is a wonderful instrument. You can be wise after the event, looking back. But faith obeys now. Faith obeys simply because God says so. Now, I suspect probably some of the people laughed at the priests standing there in the water. But I'm sure they weren't laughing when the Jordan parted to let them across. I don't think so. Maybe people laugh at you when you follow where God leads, where you follow in matters of sexual morality, when you follow in your use of time, when you follow in your use of money, in your honesty, in your clean language. Maybe they laugh. They won't laugh in the last day. They won't laugh at the end of history. They won't laugh when they see how it all works out. They won't. So if you're a Christian, you follow where God leads. Why? You follow where God leads because you believe what God promises. You follow where God leads because you believe what God's promises. That's what Joshua and the Israelites do. God makes them this spectacular promise in verse 10. God will drive out before you the Canaanites, Hittites, Hivites, Perizzites, Girgashites, Amorites, and Jebusites. These seven tribes are used again and again in the Old Testament to symbolize the sort of totality of all the pagan tribes in opposition to God's people. And God says, they're all gone. You'll drive them all out. They won't be able to stand before you. Spectacular promise. Well, is God really going to bring us victory like that? They must have been asking that, mustn't they? Is he really? How can we be sure? Like, how can we know? Well, Joshua says in verse 10, this is how you will know. And he calls God the living God. This is how you will know that the living God is among you. The living God, not like the so-called gods of the Canaanites, just things made out of wood and stone and metal and things. Not that. No, the living God. This is how you will know that the living God is among you. This is how you'll know God is going to bring you victory. Look down to verse 13. As soon as the priests who carry the ark of the Lord of all the earth, set foot in the Jordan, its waters flowing downstream will be cut off and stand up in the river. God is going to do a spectacular miracle, just like crossing the Red Sea at the Exodus. And let's just be clear as we just sort of stop and think around this. Things are basically looking pretty bleak for the Israelites as they arrive at the Jordan. Look at verse 15. The Jordan is in flood all during the harvest. Still true. The Jordan is a raging torrent that no one can begin to think about possibly getting across. But God is the God who makes the impossible possible. So, verse 15, as soon as the priests who carried the ark reached the Jordan and their feet touched the water's edge, the water from upstream stopped flowing. It piled up in a heap at a great distance away at a town called Adam. So there's the miracle, there's the evidence, there's the reassurance that God is with them. Not any old god, not wood or stone or the Canaanite stupid so-called gods. No, the living God who does things like that, who can do miracles. If God, here's the message for them. If God is prepared to put the brakes on nature and do a mighty miracle and pile up the floodwaters of the Jordan in a heap, if God's prepared to do that, surely they can trust him to bring them safely into the promised land. Can't they? God hasn't brought them out of Egypt. God hasn't brought them across the Red Sea. God hasn't brought them for 40 years in the desert. He hasn't delivered them from all its dangers. He hasn't provided for them in all the hardships. He hasn't brought them all this way to dump them now. Of course not. And this is a demonstration of God's power that was given to convince the people that God can, that God is going to drive out the Canaanites and give his people the promised land. Believe what God promises. Well, do you? I mean, that's the question, isn't it? This is not just an interesting story for us to go, ooh, isn't that good? Isn't that interesting? The question is, do you? Do you believe God's promises? Do you believe what God promises you if you're a Christian? Now, we could spend all night looking at God's promises, but here's a good one from Romans 8. In all things, God works for the good of those who love him, who have been called according to his purpose. If you're a Christian, that's you, isn't it? You love God, you've been called according to his purpose. All things that happen to you, everything in your life, is part of God working for your good, whether it seems nice to you or not. Do you believe it? Do you believe it? When you're standing looking at the floodwaters, if you like the Israelites, when people laugh at you for being a Christian, In the really hard times where it's difficult to be a Christian, as well as easy times, when things happen that you would never, ever, ever have chosen for yourself, as well as the things you wanted, do you believe that God is working his purposes out for your good and his glory through all of this? Do you? See, the Israelites would never have chosen to wander in the desert for 40 years. They would never have chosen to suffer hunger and thirst in the wilderness. They would never have chosen to battle with pagan tribes. No, no. But through it all, to a greater or lesser extent, they were holding on to what God promised. In the 1930s, there was a German preacher called Helmut Thielicke, and he lost his university position for his opposition to Hitler, and he was interrogated by the SS, and he was threatened by the SS, and towards the end of the war, he came back to his church in Stuttgart and found it had been bombed to rubble. And then he went home and he discovered that his house had been destroyed. And his heart nearly broke when he came across his starving children licking pictures of food in recipe books. But despite all of that, he continued to declare the dependability of God to his congregation. And standing in amongst the rubble, the crushed stones of the church building, this is what he said. He said, "One day when we look back from God's throne in the last day, we shall say with amazement and surprise, if I had ever dreamed when I stood in the grave of my loved ones and everything seemed to be ended, If I had ever dreamed when I saw the spectre of atomic war creeping upon us, if I had ever dreamed when I faced the meaningless fate of an endless imprisonment or a malignant disease, if I had ever dreamed that God was only carrying out his design and plan through all these woes, that in the midst of my cares and troubles and despair, his harvest was ripening and that everything was pressing on toward his last kingly day, if I had known this, I would have been more calm and confident. Yes, then I would have been more cheerful and far more tranquil and composed. So what does this mean for us? Well, the secret of living the Christian life consists in fixing your eyes not on your circumstances and your problems, but fixing your eyes on God, who he is and what he's done. Fixing your eyes on Jesus, who he is, what he's done. Follow where God leads. Why? Because you believe what God promises. Why? Because you remember what God has done. That's how it works. Follow where God leads because you believe what God promises, because you remember. You remember what God has done. And look, remembering takes an effort. It takes an effort. You have to take steps to be sure to remember. Like Remembrance Day every year and the poppies. Remember. Like the verses from the Old Testament on the guy's forehead and forearm. Remember. So here Joshua and the Israelites set about making sure that God's people remember. Look what they're told to do. Chapter 4, verse 1. Here's the center of these chapters. When the whole nation had finished crossing the Jordan, the Lord said to Joshua, "Choose 12 men from among the people, one from each tribe, and tell them to take up 12 stones from the middle of the Jordan, from right where the priest stood, and to carry them over with you, and put them down at the place where you stay tonight." Why? Verse 6, look down to verse 6. "To serve as a sign to you." To serve as a sign to you. Maybe the generation that actually crossed the Jordan in the here and now would remember. But what about the generations to come? Verse 6. "In the future, when your children ask you, 'What do these stones mean?' tell them that the flow of the Jordan was cut off before the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord. When it crossed the Jordan, the waters of the Jordan were cut off. These stones are to be a memorial to the people of Israel forever." So, that's what they did. Verse 8, "The Israelites did as Joshua commanded. They took 12 stones from the middle of the Jordan and they carried them over to their camp and put them down there." Now look down to chapter 4, verse 19. "On the 10th day of the first month, the people went up from the Jordan and camped at Gilgal on the eastern border of Jericho. And Joshua set up at Gilgal the 12 stones they had taken out of the Jordan." God doesn't work by doing mighty miracles every day. He doesn't. He set up the laws of the universe, physics, chemistry, everything else. He set it up, it works. He doesn't interfere in these things very often. But when he does, when God does do a great and mighty, wonderful thing, we need to remember it. We need to remember it. God's Old Testament people needed to remember the wonders God did to get them out of Egypt into the promised land. Out of Egypt by parting the Red Sea, into the promised land by parting the River Jordan. Verse 23, "The Lord your God dried up the Jordan before you until you had crossed over. The Lord your God did to the Jordan just what he had done to the Red Sea when he dried it up before us until we had crossed over." why did God do it? Why? Not just for the benefit of his people, but to bring glory to his name. Verse 24, he did this so that all the peoples of the earth might know that the hand of the Lord is powerful, and so that you might always fear the Lord your God. Well, what about us? There's the story. What about us? Are we forgetful? Are we forgetful that our great deliverance, if we're Christians, has been achieved by Jesus' death, taking our punishment on himself and the penalty for our rebellion on himself? That our great deliverance has been achieved through Jesus' resurrection, conquering death, the greatest miracle of all? How could we forget these wonders? But we do. Don't we? Our eyes are on Jesus on Sunday, sitting in a congregation, and when we're other Christians, and when we're at home group in midweek, or at CU, when we're with other believers, maybe our eyes are on Jesus then. But what about through the week? What about at university, or at work, or busy in the home? Just as Joshua set up the stones as a memorial to God's deliverance and bringing them into the promised land, in the same way, Jesus established the Lord's Supper for us. In a moment, we're going to share the Lord's Supper together, and it's all about remembering. How could we be forgetful about Jesus' death for our sins? How could we? We are. Aren't we? Often. Easily. We need to be reminded. The night before Jesus died, he instituted the Lord's Supper. What did Jesus say? Here are his words. This is my body given for you. Do this in remembrance of me. The 12 stones were to be a reminder to the Israelites of how God brought them through the waters of the Jordan and safely into the promised land. The Lord's Supper is a reminder to Christians of how through Jesus' death and resurrection we have been brought through God's judgment safely to the other side. For the Christian, if you're a Christian tonight, God's judgment is over. It was over 2,000 years ago. You've crossed over to the other side. For the Christian, we have been taken and placed on the other side of God's judgment. But maybe you're here this evening and you're not yet a Christian. Maybe you're looking into the Christian faith. We're delighted you're here. But what does this mean for you? Well, listen as we take part in the Lord's Supper in a moment, as we remember, as we look back and remember what Jesus did. Watch what we do. The question the Israelites were to ask was, in verse 21, what do these stones mean? The question you should be asking is, what do the bread and wine mean? What are they doing? Just as the stones from the bed of the River Jordan pictured safe passage through the water for God's Old Testament people, so the bread and the wine picture the safe passage through God's judgment for Christians. Jesus died for our sins. Jesus paid for them in full. The judgment for Christians is over. We've arrived safely on the other side. So, if you're a Christian here this evening, follow where God leads. Why? Because you believe what God promises. Why? Because you remember what God has done.